ארצנו הקטנטונה, ארצנו היפה, מולדת בלי כותונת, מולדת יחפה, קבליני אל שיריי.
It is 7 a.m. in the West Coast, it is 12 noon in the East Coast, and it is 5 p.m. in Jerusalem, Israel. Today, July 19, 2015, and this is Orly Ben Davis, and this is The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to have all the latest with a lot of Israeli music, like every Sunday, and we're going to talk and touch base with what's going on in the Holy Land. It's not simple, and we need to get our act together and make sure that we are going in the right direction. Today, we're going to have a special line, you know, that talk about the conference of Rabbi Yehuda Glick that is going to take place like in a two-hour session, about Temple Mount, the condition there, and what we actually have to look forward in the next few weeks. We're going to talk shortly with, listen shortly to some of the soundbite that is collected, but the news are falling so fast that you don't even know, you know, you don't hold to one news, then the next one is pushing. This is like a time of, you know, the Messiah, as they said. It's all going to happen, and it's going to happen fast. Now, it's up to us how we're going to take care of business. Let's start with the first soundbite that we have, and we'll take it from there, okay?
It is with great pleasure and I think a certain frisson of excitement in the room that we would like to welcome to the podium Mr. Robert Redford, a man who needs no introduction, but an actor and environmental campaigner who would like to make a statement. The floor is yours, sir.
I'm here today as an environmental advocate, but also a father, grandfather, and a concerned citizen, one of billions around the world who are urging you to take action now on climate change. I'm an actor. I'm sorry about that. I'm an actor by trade. I'm an actor by trade, but I'm an activist by nature. Somebody who's always believed that we must find the balance between what we develop for our survival and what we preserve for our survival. Your mission is as simple as it is daunting: to save the world before it's too late. Now, my own engagement on climate change began more than 40 years ago, but the urgency that I felt then has only grown stronger. And along the way, one of my initiatives was to bring mayors from around the world who are closest to the people, bring them together at Sundance to talk about the threats of climate change. And when the nations of the world gather in Paris this year, they're going to be joined by those mayors and also business and civic leaders, all ready to make commitments to action now. And nothing less than the fate of our planet is hanging in the balance. And the imperative for action should not be more clear. So today, we can no longer claim ignorance as an excuse for inaction, because it's the overwhelming judgment of science that climate change is real and the result of human activity. And as Pope Francis has so eloquently pointed out, climate change is a moral imperative that transcends politics. And we see the effects all around us, from drought and famine in Africa and heat waves in South Asia to wildfires across North America, devastating hurricanes, tornadoes, crippling floods here in New York. The heat wave in India and Pakistan has already claimed more than 2,300 lives, making it one of the deadliest in history. And so, everywhere we look, moderate weather seems to be going extinct. All the years of the 21st century so far have ranked among the warmest on record. And as temperatures rise, so do global instability, poverty, and conflict. Now, the best scientists in the world tell us that we've already used up more than half of our remaining carbon budget. Now, an increase of just 2 degrees Celsius is all that separates our planet from becoming less habitable. Now, that difference is barely perceptible to human skin, but 2 degrees is all it takes to turn an agriculture breadbasket into desert and eliminate fresh water from a third of the world's land surface by 2100. So, our window of opportunity is narrow. And the margin between success and catastrophic failure is unfortunately thin. And the time for half measures and climate denial is over. Unless we move quickly away from fossil fuels, we're going to destroy the air we breathe, the water we drink, the health of our children, grandchildren, and future generations. And if we're going to avoid the worst of the impacts, then we've just got to act boldly. And we must act immediately, because we're all responsible for this crisis. And right now, citizens, communities, corporations, and countries around the world are stepping up to the challenge. So that's the good news. More than 500 cities have made that decision to create jobs, improve the quality of life, and reduce emissions by investing in clean energy. Last year, US and China, the two largest emitters of greenhouse gas, agreed to historic carbon reductions. But look, no country can solve this crisis alone. We've all got to do more. We must be a movement that includes every single nation on Earth, because climate change affects every nation on Earth. So this December, the world must unite behind a common goal. Because look, this is it. This is our only planet, our only life source. This may be our last chance. Our planet's resources are limited, but there's no limit to the human imagination and our capacity to solve bigger problems. So only by acting now and standing together behind a universal climate agreement can we live up to the UN's promise that was made years ago, its founding promise. And only by acting now and standing together can we achieve the results we need in the time that we have left. And only by acting now and standing together can we begin to tip the scales and change the course of history. When 193 countries take center stage in Paris this December, the citizens of the world are going to be watching. And we're going to be looking to you to assume the leading role in combating climate change. And I, for one, hope you will embrace that role with courage and conviction. Thank you.
And we are back. It's BBS Radio with The Impossible Truth, your host, Lily Benny Davis. I'm very happy to present that, soundbite. Robert Redford is one of the most incredible activists. For some reason, I'm hearing some noises in the background. It's impossible for you to hear me, maybe, but I will go on and talk. The important thing that we need to pay attention to is that there are things that must be done to the in the universe. Fossil fuel is not something that, we have to gain access to it. If you gain access to it, it means that you need to be responsible for what's happening after that. Let's go to some music, and we'll be back. Put down the December conference on the environment that's been talking about. We'll be right back. Yeah, that was a beautiful song. Our love is exploding. And you know, there is nothing bigger and larger than the love that you can feel for God. Many people, desperate people, have a problem to understand that the hole they feel inside is the yearning for God. Because there is no way that a human being can fulfill your love, your heart, if you don't feel the creation, the love for the creation, the understanding that you are special and God is gave you the soul that you live with. You have to understand that we are part of this universe, a constant being, that we are connected. And when you love each other and you love yourself because you are grateful to whatever God gave you, you can start being happy for real from your gut. And this is nothing in the world can be as fulfilling as the love that you understand when God, you know, is within you, that you are part of it. And we got Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, that is one of the incredible rabbis, to talk about when, you know, you pray, when you talk to God. Let's listen to this.
Bilvavi Mishkan Evne, a lovely poem about prayer itself, written by Rabbi Eliezer Azikri, one of the mystics in Safat in the 16th century. In my heart, I'll build a temple to God's glory. In it, I'll build an altar lit by the fire of Abraham's love. And as a sacrifice, I offer to God my one and only soul. Prayer is the language of faith, and the prayer book is the map of the Jewish mind. The song we sing to God is the music of the Jewish soul, and somehow in time beyond time and space beyond space, our finitude meets God's infinity, and we are brushed by the wings of the Shekhinah, the divine presence. Don't expect it to happen every time or all at once, for there is no human understanding without time and study. Yet it's there in our prayers written by our ancestors as they strove to find the words that would reach out toward the unsayable, like a message transmitted to some distant star. And there you will find the mystery of Jewish spirituality that turned our ancestors, a tiny and otherwise undistinguished people, into a nation that defied the laws of history and outlasted all the world's great empires. Prayer is the place where our speaking meets God's listening, and in ways we will never understand, we are transformed. Shana Tova.
All right, and we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth on BBS Radio Studio One. We are very, very excited about this, you know, all the events that are taking place. For some reason, it's the global movement of something. Something good is going to happen soon, very soon. Because we are all in tune. When we are in tune, we know that the decision-making is not going to be overlooked by anybody. It means that you are not going to have, you know, your freedom just to act. You know, your responsibility that every action will be a consequence. And the consequences are really, really clear. It's getting, you know, all this blur that everybody was living in with this economy, with craziness, make all sense all of a sudden. Because look what happened last week. They had to sign an agreement with Iran. Iran, they didn't want to play. But what happened to Iran? Let's ask for real. And what's the connection with Jonathan Pollard? You know, all of a sudden that they're saying that he's going to be released. What's the connection? If you feel that 30 years ago, Iran and Pollard's story were, you know, adjacent to each other. For some reason, Pollard was on, I don't know, the story is immense. I don't know what's the real story behind there. But I just want to tell you that Pollard as Iran have turned the page on history, and now it's settled that Iran's fine. It doesn't matter that she will cheat or not. We are watching, and she's going to suffer a consequence that she doesn't want even to consider. Her risk of taking action, of any action, to undermine the G5 plus one, to undermine the will of the United States of America, will come with a very, very expensive consequence. Nobody wants to imagine what will happen. So I think that their willing to sign means something else. It means that they are opening their hearts, their soul, their economical future, their livelihood, their change. They are ready for a change. If they like it or not, they sign on it. It means that their will, you know, there is a choice always to go bad or good, right? We all know that. We all know that in our hearts. We all know it. That's why it's so easy to understand, you know, the book, the rule. You know, the Jewish people got a big, big book that came with them, the Bible. The Bible is the roadmap for redemption, roadmap for livelihood. It's the Bible. It's incredible, the most popular book in the world. And what we have inside, we have wisdom. We have antidote. We have the stories that, you know, the most awful stories sometimes, and most incredible love stories, the songs of all songs, and the geniuses of King Solomon, and the story of Moses and his blessing and why he got punished by God. You have to understand that we are living as a multiplication of sorts of stories that just represented in one book. Why it's so popular? Because it applies to everybody. It applies to all nations. It applies to everything. And, you know, the stories that we have to strongly, strongly embrace now together is the fact that we have a falling out of some of our youth. The youth that went wild between, you know, the economy, the growth, and the children, you know, that were running loose while the parents were going to work so hard to make, you know, makes the global dream, the future dream. And then we find some guys that decide to kill people just because they are depressed. That's the story that we have today, that they were depressed and they killed. They went and shoot Marines because they were depressed. Well, what is this depression all about? You know, the story in the Jewish faith, we have one big movement, one incredible movement, that Chabad is a story that Rabbi Lubavitch led on. Rabbi Lubavitch was recognized as a rabbi, and he died, but his spirit is still with us. the idea was he wanted to give grace to people. He was standing, he put houses in every state that he could, in America, in the world, and said, you know, you're going to be a warm house, a house that will welcome every Jewish person in need. You're going to embrace him. You're going to smile to him. You don't criticize him. And you're going to give him food sometimes for a holiday so he feels, you know, at home. Very, very modest, you know, living. The community, of course, will support it, but it will be a welcoming house. That house is a source of strength of the Jewish community in the world. Because if you go to Nepal, for example, in the last disaster that we have an earthquake, everybody went to that Chabad house, the warm place. They knew they're going to have connection with the world. They're going to have connection with God, of course, to get strength, to overcome it, to empower themselves. And then they're going to have some, you know, food for soul and, you know, for the body. They're going to have help. That kind of story meets people from between, you know, they're looking for God. When they're looking for God, they go to Chabad. It's not like they're going to God because, you know, they're asking because they're desperate. Or they're in, you know, in the jungle. I don't know where. But that movement created 300,000 messengers. Every shaliach, every messenger goes to the end of the earth to help those lost souls and be a vessel for God to become a part of the continuity of the Jewish faith. But it's not about the Jewish faith only, because many people that are not Jewish go there, and they have the seven law of Noah. And we had Rabbi Duron from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, that spoke about it. And he was explaining that we have, you know, in the Ten Commandments, you have, of course, the one that relates to the Jewish faith. And then you have seven laws of Noah within that says that they're universal. So if we have a universal global movement to help our children, they are children of the world. You know, people cannot say this is a different country. I see those immigrants, and we talked about it on our Wednesday show. We have a Wednesday show that talks, you know, it's basically Italian, and we are going to talk about, you know, the immigrants there that they have to have, you know, once they touch Europe, they need to have a free movement because there are no border controls. No, wrong. They do border control, and they all stuck in Italy for some reason. If we had a one house for those, that's United Nations role, right? Not criticizing, helping. They don't have teeth to bite, so they are, you know, Security Council, even, you know, whatever it is, it doesn't have an army. So enough with those legislation, you know, whatever, against somebody, you know, and now you're going to have, what they're going to recognize the latest recognition of a seat in the United Nations. I'm not going to mention it even because it's not worth mentioning, because when they include terrorist organization inside, you know that organization become loco. So I'm telling you, we can go in the right direction if we set. Now let me go back to what Robert Redford said about the environment and about we need to recover it fast. Okay, let's look at China. China is dying, is killing their people from the smoke. I don't know what they think. But they need, you know, we have to make sanctions to stop supplying them with the fuel to smoke their people. Because you can kill people slowly or fast. It's like, remember we have a non-smoking zone in America? Well, in China, they have to stop smoke their people out. Okay? I know that the Chinese don't like criticism. I know that they understand that we are... really, but this is impossible truth. I have to tell you what I think, but I come from a place of love and a place that I want God to be with you constantly, and I pray with you, and I bless you, and I want you to understand that we are a part of this immense universe. As Robert Redford says, we are connected. This is our only planet that we can live in. Even though, you know, they could discover the planet, but nobody has a plan to go anywhere for now. So let's start what we have around here in the Middle East. We have one place in the universe, one place. And I'm talking emergency number one that you can fulfill, you can solve, and you can actually act upon fast. I don't know what everybody doing on the environmental. But we have the lowest point in the universe is at sea. It is here in the Middle East. It is a sea all made from salt, incredible resources of saline and incredible healing. You know, it has the healing capacity of so many diseases, and it's been sold to some company to dry out, to get the salt and sell it because it's such a great production. But what happened? They're killing that sea. That sea is so low now that so many plants were decided to help, to get. And just now I had a connection from Jordan. Jordan, oh, we are the group of the people of Jordan. We want to be in peace with Israel, and we want to have the movement for the people. Okay, we have Dead Sea, but they call it Dead Sea. Let's call it the Green Sea, the movement that will start from making it green, making it again flowing with water. And we connect the water from whatever fast resources we can. And the options are a few. And there is a plan in the making or done in the door, whatever. That sea, the salty sea of the lowest place in the universe, this is one of a kind in the universe, needs your help. We need to act upon to make sure it's not gone, because this alien protection will heal a generation after us. And what we're doing, they're doing zilch. Come on, let's not start with talking about the government. The government is like ridiculously helpless. Why can't anybody understand that this is healing? It's like the penicillin that people were saying, oh, we're losing it because, you know, don't use it because we're losing it. And then people die because they didn't give them a penicillin. But think about that alien protection that you have. And it's immense. If anybody went to the salty sea, don't call it the Dead Sea. Never again. The salty. That's what we call it in Hebrew. Yamamelach. That's Yam is sea, Melach is salt, and we need to give it more water. It's asking, calling for water. What are we going to do about it? Let's pray to God to have some rain. So it's not, but it's near the desert. So we need a cooperation of Jordan. Jordan, dear Jordan, you want our cooperation? Please help us save that sea. This is a sea that one of a kind in the universe. Let's get some music and then we're going to go to the next spot.
גבוהים פרוסה אדרת השקיעה סמוקת שוליים קשה קשה שלא להיות בך נביאים או לפחות משוררים ירושלים אך בין חוזייך שניבאו בך נואשות את המלכות ואת הדם ואת החרב אני רוצה להיות הילד הראשון שיתעורר בירושלים האחרת ירושלים, ירושלים, ירושלים של שלום, ירושלים
All right, we have Rabbi Sacks going on. That was a beautiful song about Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the eternal city of God. Is one of a kind, and you know we roll with this show every time, as we have actually the sense of it, what's happening. And you know, I want to talk about Donald Trump, but probably I'm going to talk about him tomorrow. I got so much stuff to talk about, but for some reason, the universe is asking for us to come together. Let's listen to Rabbi Sacks.
The Day of Atonement, when we turn to God for forgiveness, and in preparation for that we try and apologize to those whom we have hurt, and we forgive those who have hurt us. And normally in Judaism we see forgiveness as something associated with atonement, remorse, apology. But Maimonides, our greatest sage of the Middle Ages, rules that if the other person does not apologize, you are still free to forgive, and you should. And I agree with him, because harboring a grudge or a resentment is a terrible weight to carry around with you. And you have to travel light in this world. We have too few energies to waste them on being unforgiving. The search for perfect justice in this world is impossible. So try and create a just society as far as it lies within you. But you have to let go of the past. And that really is what forgiveness is. And though it benefits the forgiven, it benefits the forgiver still more. You cannot forgive.
All right, we are back.
While evil is ongoing. That simply is, in my humble view, irresponsible.
How long it is. Tell me when I can.
Somebody who is planning a suicide bombing attack.
I'm sorry?
But what then will I say, if God forbid?
All right, it's worth it. It's worth it.
Or among the victims.
Let's listen. Louder.
Is always something that accompanies a cease, a pause, an armistice, a sulcha, what have you. There has to be an end, a truce, let us say, in the hostilities before forgiveness can begin. Otherwise, no one is in the real mood to forgive. You have to create space. I mean, if I harm you, the natural thing is for you to harm me. That is a chain of cause and effect, which destroyed many ancient societies and is destroying many at this moment. And forgiveness is that radically unpredictable thing, that human capacity to do the unexpected, to respond in a way that could not have been predicted. So forgiveness has something to do with human freedom, that even though I may feel assaulted and victimized, I can momentarily stand outside that and think not as a victim, but as somebody who is an agent of forgiveness. And because of forgiveness, we are not condemned endlessly to replay the conflicts of the past. And that is why forgiveness is logically and psychologically related to hope. Forgiveness is the prelude to reconciliation. Once we forgive, we get rid of the bad stuff. And we're able then to shake hands. And because we've been liberated from the past, together plan a future in which we work together instead of against one another. And I remember a moment, I doubt whether I will ever forget it, in 1999, towards the end of the summer, when I went over to Pristina to visit. They just make a television program there. It was just the end of the Kosovo conflict. Slowly, the Kosovan Albanians were coming back to their homes. Hundreds of thousands had fled in terror. And, you know, the NATO presence was very evident. There were tanks outside every house of worship. And I stood there in the middle of Pristina with all the rubble of the bombs all over the place. And I suddenly discovered, I realized the power of one word, to forgive. If the Serbs and the Kosovan Albanians were able to forgive one another, and to be forgiven by one another, which means apologizing as well, then they would have a future. If not, they would find themselves endlessly replaying the Battle of Kosovo of 1389. And therefore, I suddenly saw the whole future of that part of the world will depend on whether they can forgive or they can't. And I don't think I've ever felt that carry home to me as immediately and powerfully as it did then, because, as I say, that conflict had been going on for 700 years. It was dormant for many years, but Milosevic and Karadzic and the various leaders were able to reignite it because, as Ogden Nash once said, no man ever forgets where he buried the hatchet. If you focus on children, or even on grandchildren not yet born, then you're facing towards the future. And if you're facing towards the future, you can forgive, because what matters to you is not what happened, but what we can build together. Whereas a lack of forgiveness is always tied to a strong sense of reverence and loyalty to the past. That's why people find it impossible to forgive, because, after all, how could, you know, I may forgive, but what about my father or my grandfather whom they murdered or stuck in prison? You know, I have to honor their memory by avenging their honor on their enemies. So if I am totally loyal to the past, I will actually find it a moral failing to forgive, because I will not be honoring them. And then I suddenly realized that we have to be able to move from a past-oriented culture to a future-oriented culture. We should not ask what happened to our grandparents. We should ask what kind of world we want to create for our grandchildren. And that does not mean forgetting. Forgiving does not mean forgetting. It means living with the past, but not living in the past. We always end on a note of not quite crossing the Jordan, of the promised land seen from afar. So that sense of a future that we are just on the threshold of, or of a vision that lies just over the horizon, that is the Jewish view. It's a very future-oriented view, and it's one that allows us to forgive for the sake of our children, rather than avenge the slights to our parents.
And we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis on PBS Radio with The Impossible Truth. It's 15 minutes to go, and we didn't cover anything but just a few things that matter most. We have to forgive, so we can let go. We have to let go of that heavy duty load of the past. This this is the line that we have to trace in the sand. We said, this is it. That's it. Whatever over is over. And let's go next. Let's see what is going to happen tomorrow. How are we going to make it beautiful? How are we going to think about our children, our grandchildren, God willing, to come? And how are we going to turn this universe to the heaven that it once was? And, you know, there is a story always that people say, if you can go back in history, what point in history you would go to do something, to change? And I would say, always I will say, the Garden of Eden, and I will tell Eve not to touch that apple or give it to Adam. Because from that story, that's the ultimate start of all this mess. So we could have gone back to have Eden. And, you know, that's why I like these stories, Disneyland, because it's always give you the option of a better world. And what is it with this world that has to be so bad or so hard or so incredibly challenging? Why we don't have a world when we can actually live with, love, and of course there are always the bad guys. But if we unite, the good guys unite, the bad guys will change your mind, or they will be expelled or something. But that there will be a time that, you know, the good will win, right? Because at the end of the game, you know, there is a God, and it's not us. And whatever we do, he's watching, and he can interfere. And, you know, today was planned to be, my show was planned to be with different direction, maybe, or this direction, I don't know. But it went, and it goes according to this atmosphere that we find. And we find this atmosphere of understanding that there is something in the air. Something is changing. I don't know how to say it. When I get a call, you know, from not a call, a writing, you know, this is, let's do a movement now, let's, the people of Jordan want to be together. And I'm saying, well, that's a great thing. It's happening. So let's do, you know, when you have to want to have fun, really, as forgiveness goes and everything goes, you have to make action. You have to have activity. You know, in America, they are special about the activity. They know exactly what to do. The children, you know, how they interact, they have activity sections. And in the world, we need to have activity, because if not, we go and destroy ourselves. If we don't have a major project to, you know, to make a bridge, to make to help a sea come back to life, to make, you know, to find a way to the moon, we are not doing anything together. So we start fighting. It's every society. It's the same thing. What's so wonderful about, you know, doing nothing? That's why the green movement is so effective in the concept. But they didn't touch base because they sold it not in the right direction. They sold it, it's going to collapse. Everything is going to die. And you know that when you know the universe, it's not upon us to fix or do anything. You just have to keep it well. So right now we have this world that is just incredible, because it's everybody is on the go. And even, you know, Donald Trump is coming out all with a fist up and down, and we have to understand he wants a place in this platform, and you guys cannot take it from him, Republican or not. You know, he's leading the role. Of course he's leading the role. He's the richest of all. And after he runs out of money, then we'll see who's going to win, right? The truth of the matter is, you know, to run for president, we like American president to be a gentleman. Whatever you can say about our president, you always can say that they all are gentlemen. And when you start lashing out on people, you know, that's my, you know, I can't stop being political at 1 minute. You know, God created me and I love it so much, but he created me to talk politics, I guess, too. So when somebody, you know, is running for office and he lashes at the other, you're not a warrior. What does it mean? How do you know? What is a warrior? You went to the army? No, all right? You are a warrior, okay? You're a war of the economy. You survive it. You undermine everybody and you have like $8 billion and you like cheated everybody out of their money because that's the only way that the economy goes sometimes. No, you didn't cheat it. Well, I don't say that he cheated. Of course, he was outsmart them. Okay, let's say outsmart them. Of course, it's outsmart. You can, you know, because everybody's naive. And you know everything, Donald Trump. You want your fist fight? You want to boycott Mexico? What's wrong with this picture? You know, you're 2 minutes running. You already lashed at all candidates. You took a war hero and you declare that he's not. Like, who gave you the authority to declare if one is a hero or not? Because only the soldier next to him can say. And to be a hero is also to survive. To survive 5.5 years as a prisoner of war. POW, they're all survivors, they're all heroes, they all gave their lives, they suffer. In the worst of all, how dare you lash at them? And we forgive you. And Mr. McCain, please, Senator McCain, I'm going to ask for him to ask for forgiveness or apologize. If somebody speak like that, who cares? He's going to run out of his money. Because to run for president costs a lot. And the Republican Party, you know, they let them run. What can he do? Can you stop him? No, he's coming punching. Yeah, great. But this is not the economy, stupid. It's the world, stupid. We're talking about world events. Oh, of course, you understand better than us everything. And I'm no... You know, no paragon to your wealth and everything. And I know what it takes to make the economy, you know, economic growth success. It takes a lot of effort and everyday struggle. No question about your talent. Okay? But please, don't destroy the club while you're at. Because if anything, after that, you cannot win the heart of the American people. The American people have a heart, a kind, generous people. And they like their president to be kind, generous, and a gentleman. And so far, Sunshine, you ain't that. So, you know, hold your horses because you need better, you know, downsize your lashing because they're not going to take it. And if you're going to win the nomination by so, I don't know how it's going to be, how can you even imagine to run this role and win the nomination? At the end of the game, the Democrats, you know, will find their gentleman because so far, you know, the lady in the crowd is not that charming either. So let's get some more music and it should be good because... would love to have some Fiddler on the Roof if we have it. But, whatever it is, we'll love you guys. So, right here, let's listen to some music.
Oh, Lord, you made many, many poor people. I realize, of course, it's no shame to be poor. But it's no great honor either. So what would have been so terrible if I had a small fortune? If I were a rich man, I have a dibby 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 dum. All day long I biddy biddy bum,
If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. Oh, yabba dibba 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 dibba. If I were a bitty bitty rich, idle diddle 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 man.
Oh, Fiddler Up on the Roof, what a show, what a show. A story about the love, forbidden love, a story of a hardship of the old days in the, you know, old Europe, when people, farmers, and they were, I don't know how it started, but we don't want to go back to that, okay, guys? We don't want to go back to that, but we want to wrap up this show and tell you all that how we are kind to each other when we want and we can do it, how we can make a difference, and how, you know, everybody can start with saying hello to each other, like in the South. You know, you don't pass by a stranger and you don't salute them in the South. You say, howdy, how are you? You say, good morning, good afternoon. Just say hello. Let's make this a movement. You know, somebody was mentioning it in, you know, in the news today. It's not my idea. It's somebody else's idea, so I don't take credit of it. But they say, why don't we make a movement to say hello back in the South? South Carolina, you guys have a big, very, very, very big hug for me. And I hope that, you know, whatever we learned from the past, we can correct. Because that demonstration of this last weekend was unbearable, unforgivable, but it is forgiven. But all those groups that hate, you know, the existence of other, we need to be really, really strong in them. So I salute you with love and caring, and I hope that to hear you tomorrow. I'm going to be back. All right? So tomorrow, going to be 10 a.m., I guess, in the West Coast, and it's going to be 8 p.m. in Jerusalem time. So God bless you all. Talk to you later.
יום אחד זה יקרה בלי שנרגיש משהו ישתנה משהו ירגע בנו משהו ייגע בנו ולא יהיה ממה לחשוש וזה יבוא כמו קרב חרוט על כף יד זה יבוא בטוח בעצמו כאילו היה שם תמיד וחיכה רק שנבחין בו וזה יבוא אתה תראה